No, I wanted to change the file. So now, because this is an international call and we are recording this call, I didn't want the file to get too large for others to download and listen. Go ahead.
Satya, there's another question for you.
Yes.
I just want to ask, today, actually, you brought that over this country, and the WWF is going to organize the press conference.
We could not understand that.
Satya, what kind of issues would you like the journalist to raise in front of Vis-a-Vis? There's a press conference he's holding today at 3.
Okay.
This method.
Okay. Now, there are a lot of other points. One of the important points is a 498A, a lot of times these 498A are filed by the women who are going back to India after the husband in the foreign country has filed for a divorce. Now, once you have come to a point where you have decided to terminate your marriage, after that, if anyone files a 498A or a Domestic Violence Act, that should be seen as a retaliatory step, and that should not be allowed to register, at least in the case of NRIs. Also, their parents and extended family should not be put in jail, because everyone knows that NRI is a soft target and they would like to protect their extended family no matter what. And that is how, you know, initially this thing starts with the money, and then that we will do this to your relatives and parents and your near and dear ones. For once, a man would go through all the trouble and would fight it out. But when the man sees that their parents and sisters, sister-in-law, mothers are held at ransom, then they would actually would like to settle more than go and fight it out for 5 years.
So one of the reasons the false 498 cases are filed with impunity is because the women knows there's no repercussions for her, and it is really, 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 really hard for an NRI to come to India and fight the case. So what we would also demand is some concessions in the judicial system. For example, if we cannot come to India for fighting our case, we should be allowed video conferencing, or we could use technology to actually represent ourselves in the courts of India.
Or if possible, they should facilitate speedy trials, because if they really want, all these falsely accused NRIs will gladly go to India and face trial to prove their innocence, which is absolutely unnecessary. But they will gladly go to India to prove their innocence if they were actually offered a fair trial and a speedy trial.
Also,
it should also be available. It should also be available offense.
Yes, and I would like to add over here is, if we have this kind of a law to protect women, that only the word of complaint without a proof is sufficient to register a criminal case against the whole family, then there should be one, at least this provision in the law, that you should, or the judicial system should request the woman to go through a narco-analysis test to identify if she is telling a lie or not.
This is Deepak from California. Just to add a couple of things.
The question, please. Go ahead.
I just want to ask one thing again. The government of India is going to organize NRI Day, Bharati Pravasi Divas, on 7th to 9th January. Is anyone of your representatives coming and going to ask this question to our Prime Minister or the person concerned? Any of your representatives coming there?
Okay.
Can you repeat the question? Okay, can someone repeat the question, Anupma?
Yes, Satya, I'll repeat it. He says that the Pravasiya Bhartiya Divas is to be held from 7 to 9 January, and he wants to know if any one of the representatives of 498A.org are going to be there to question the authorities, that if they want NRIs to come and invest here, what are they going to do about these grievances that the NRIs have against the government of India? Well, go ahead, Satya, would you like to answer that?
Okay, I can answer partly to that. One of the things is, it is not, see, we have over 1.5 years told government in more than 10 or 12 different ways about what is happening, and we, the representatives of 498.org, representatives of Rakshak, have personally met with the NRI minister Vela Ravi when he came over here in June and July. People have met him personally and intimated him about the blatant misuse of 498A when he was in Los Angeles, California. Then when he went to New York, a delegation of 5 people from the organization forgottenwoman.org had met him and told him again the same thing. And then when he went to Chicago, this Vandana, who is on the line right now, also raised this point about how government of India is ignoring what is this very main point about misuse of 498A against the NRIs who are self-sufficient, who have actually contributed toward the success of not only India but many other countries in the world. So this is not a hidden fact from the government of India. And also I would request everyone over there in the generalist panel to go through the website of Ministry of Overseas Indian Affairs, moia.gov.in, and see for yourself in the comment section. There are about 500 comments which mention what is happening to all these NRIs. We have already represented ourselves in more than different ways.
So,
okay, I want to add on here.
Sure, Vandana, go ahead.
I am so ashamed to say it. This is Vandana from Chicago. United States government has put a warning on their home website that if somebody, non-resident Indian, they are going to get married in India, there be very careful. There can be false charges against them. They can be behind bars. And that is like, I don't know. I mean, that's what I said. I left India 15 years ago, and I'm requesting you guys, as my counterparts, please do something. At least the life has to have some mission, you know.
Sure.
False charges are used for the purpose of extortion also. That's what the, you know, I mean, website says. Right.
So actually, I would like to add over here and answer the question directly about who would like to represent 498.org for Pravasi Bharati Divas. We have already contacted the government in so many different ways. When they were over here, we have personally met. And just because all these people are soft target, we don't want to go to India, and we don't want our passports to be impounded and put us people in prison just because we wanted to raise a question personally to the government in Pravasi Bharati Divas. We have already raised our points to them.
So besides that, you know, we have really engaged the government at various levels in the last 1.5 years. We have met with the Consulate General in San Francisco multiple times. He is very well.
Play a role here, please. Media should play a role here. They should speak on behalf of these
people. Yeah, and media is trying to help us, Vanna. Thank you.
So,
I would like to add a few points here.
I'd just like to add here that when in the U.S. they met the Ministry of External Affairs, his response was that he was scared of doing anything because he would have to face a backlash of feminists. So that is the kind of fear now that the government has, and they actually don't want to come up and speak up against this because they think there's a huge organization, the NCW and the feminists, and they fear what their reaction would be.
Right. His precise words in New York were that who wants to be corralled by the women's groups? And, you know, I mean, who wants the women's groups to walk into their office and break all the furniture and do things like that, you know?
Satya, I would like to add one point here.
Who cannot save himself as a minister? How can he save the nation?
Satya, hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
This is Santa from Ohio. I would like to add a few points here. Already, Center for Social Research has stated in the last 10 years of 498A history, 2% of conviction rate. And in the year of 2005, according to the National Crime Records Bureau, there are 1,35,000 arrests and only 5,700 convictions. That is 4.2% of conviction rate. But still, this 498A is existing in India. And I do not
think that Indian government or NCW or the Ministry of Women or Child Welfare Department, I dare to say that everybody knew about this abuse for in the last 15 years. And such a large-scale elder abuse that WHO, World Health Organization, has also mentioned on their website. For the details and the citations, there is a website called www.ipc498a.org/498a.ppt. PowerPoint.
So,
www.ipc498a.org/498a.ppt. And one of the significant points is that...
Okay, now,
Santa, one sec. I think Anupa wants to raise a point here. Anupa, are you saying something?
I want to clarify, you know, some of the points that he raised. I just want you people to really get this really clearly. Now, this is in response to an RTI, which was put in by the 490.org, and this is the response that was there, and this is for the year 2005. The number of cases that were registered under IPC 498A were something like 58,319.
No,
okay?
The total arrests are
1,30,000. Santa, can you please let
Anupma say things. Santa, please hold on.
Just let me complete. The number of cases that eventually went on to be charged, meaning that they went on to face trial, out of these 58,319 were only 47,828. The rest of the charges were dropped. A trial was not held because they were frivolous complaints, right? So now you just look at the number of people. The number of people who were arrested under these registered cases were something like 1,34,757 people. Out of these, some of the cases get dropped. They are arrested, they are imprisoned, but no trial is ever held. So something like 25,000 people were arrested without any reason, and they finally did not even undergo a trial. What were the number of cases who were finally convicted after a trial was held? Out of 47,828 people who were charge-sheeted, only 5,739 were finally convicted. How many were acquitted? 24,127 people. Do the math. Thousands and thousands of people who were arrested, who were imprisoned, who were tortured, who underwent the harassment of 6 years of running around the Indian legal system, which in itself is a punishment. And only to come out to be declared not guilty at the end of this all. And all this on the basis of one oral submission or complaint by the wife. So this is how the IPC 498A has been formulated and implemented.
I would like to add something over here. Is all this information was conveyed properly, debated to the minister Vela Ravi personally by different groups in the United States, just to hear back from him that he knows all this and he cannot afford to take action because he is afraid that woman organization will do a dharna in front of his office. And in all of the three meetings he had with different groups, he mentioned exactly the same thing, that he knows, but he cannot afford to take action because he cannot afford to have a dharna done by women organizations in front of his office. Now, I would like to mention another point which is very much pertinent and related to this. And you, the people sitting in New Delhi, must have this marriage booklet issued by the Ministry of Overseas Indian Affairs. I'm sure there are some copies lying around which you can get. This marriage booklet was released by, or at least in the draft stage, by Ministry of Overseas Indian Affairs, as and the name of the booklet is Marriages to Overseas Indian. If you go through this booklet, you would get a picture that all the NRI husbands and their families are basically dowry seekers, woman beaters, they harass women and they drive pleasure out of it. Now, every marriage, wherever it is in India or outside of India, has problems. We all know that. Now, what Ministry of Overseas Indian Affairs is doing is labeling that for every failed and fraudulent marriages, it's only the NRI husband and their families who are responsible Now, those people who are self-sufficient, who graduated from good colleges, who come to this country, who have made their successful careers, why would they beat or harass a woman and on top of everything would not have any cases against them in the country of their residence like US or Canada, but would have several charges or criminal charges against them in India? And we protested against this marriage booklet, but nothing came out. And if those people who are going to attend the Pravasi Bharati Divas conference, please raise this question. Please take a copy of that marriage booklet and say, what is the basis behind this marriage booklet?
Also,
anyone else wants to add point?
It's important to remember that all these... Can you please take the question?
Sure.
Satya. Go ahead.
Hi, Satya. I'd like to ask something like, is there any change in the society out there? Like, why do NRI still want a bride from India? It's not a problem.
Okay, can you repeat the question?
This is Dev from Santa Claus.
No, hold on, Dev. Let us hear the question again.
Okay,
the question is, why do Indians in the US or any overseas Indians still prefer to come back to India and get married? Why don't they change their mindset wherein...
Okay, I have... Okay, I will have two answers to your question, and then I will ask others to answer also. One thing is, no one, I would say, if you do a poll in India, 99.99% people would not even know about 498A before they get married. They don't know. Nobody can believe that such kind of a criminal law can exist in any country. NRIs, like, I got married, I did not know. Anyone, you can ask this question to anyone, they did not know that this kind of a law exists in India. There was not even a single... Now, the other question, the I would answer your question...
Wake up in the prison.
Yeah, the I would actually answer your question with another question is, with the kind of booklet MOIA Ministry has issued... that all the NRI men and their families are, the devils. Why would people in India still like to marry off their daughter with these devils who are sitting in the US?
Okay. So let me take that question actually here. This is Andy from California. So one of the reasons we NRIs prefer to actually marry a person from India is because we want to preserve our culture. Staying in the US, the culture is very different here, and at heart we are all Indians, and we'd like to see our own children to be Indians as much as possible, even if we live in any country abroad. So one of the thinking here is that if we actually get a person, get our spouse from India, then since she's an Indian, she will be able to inculcate the Indian values along with us into our children, who can then be called proud Indians.
That in some instances there are NRIs, although they settle abroad, they eventually want to return back to India to live in India, or to settle or retire in India. So that is why I think they look for a partner that, would, be willing to return to India, and that's, perhaps, a certain percentage.
Sure.
Left our country, not our culture.
NRIs are preserving the culture, Indian culture, much better than the Indians living in India. That's, all what people are saying. We go to temples, we pray, we're building nice big temples over here. So we're, preserving our culture. I'd like to add to that.
Hold on.
Yeah.
The reporter wants to know whether you have any kind of awareness program for the NRIs, wherein they should learn about IPC 498A and take an educated decision before they actually decide to come to India to marry an Indian woman. That's
yes, actually, I would like to take that question.
This is the Dev from Santa Clara. One point I want to make sure is, this
NRI, whichever we call as NRI, they are not actually born and brought up in India, born and brought up in United States. They are actually from India, and they just came maybe 3 months or a single month before they come to United States, and maybe some of them are actually married in India, and then they come together with their wife. So we are not actually of the culture of United States or any other Western culture. We are the same kids. We were together in India. So we are just like one month old in the United States. Right. So that is a bigger point. We have to make sure that we are not NRS, means we are not born in United States.
Right. Like you correctly mentioned, this is Rajesh from Birmingham. We are not people of Indian origin. We are non-resident Indians.
Right. Yeah, so basically a lot of these 498As are filed against the people who are married in India, who came over here for a job for 2 or 3 years and would like to go back to India. In the meantime, the woman has arguments, goes back to India, files 498A.
So returning back to the question again, this is Andy from California.
There's another question for you. This is from a reporter from CNED. She'd like to ask you a question. Go ahead.
Well,
like we have been telling, you know, no one expects to get into trouble. You know, no one knows about 498A.
No person in this forum at this point of time, before NRI, this 498A was filed on them, nobody knew about this law. Not even my father knew about this law. Okay,
your father lives in India, Satya, right? He doesn't live here.
My father is in India. He lived all his life in India. He had no clue about 498A. And also, I would like to make a point here is we, the 10-member delegation of Rakshak, met with the Counselor General of India at San Francisco, asked them to put this kind of a booklet in the embassy and in the consulates about this 498A and what is happening, and he blatantly said no, he cannot do that. So our efforts of increasing the awareness of 498A were curbed by the government intentionally. And you can do a poll, and actually I would suggest reporters, and it would be a very good learning for everyone, to go into a college and ask them, do you know about 498A? And you would see how many people know about 498A. So the awareness we have been able to bring is only minuscule. It is not even one in a million.
Anupama, this is Karthik from Tennessee. Just to add on Satya's comment, we are trying to I personally, I have 80 member team. I am a system lead. Everybody knows what I am suffering too. So there are married men, there are unmarried men who are going to get married in pretty soon, maybe in 1 or 2 years. They know that right now. They know that there is a kind of law. This exists. So we are trying to educate the people as we meet. So I'm open to all, because I know that what I'm suffering, but it's not my fault. It's because of the law we have. So that's the way we're trying to educate the person whomever we met.
Right. And actually, right, to add on to this, this is...
The local U.S. senators and congressmen and other politicians, because... And, you know, every time we try and educate these people, they basically start laughing, thinking, you know, how silly... anybody be to come up with such stupid laws?
Yeah, I went to police station and I told them that my passport has been impounded in India. And they said, how can this been impounded? this is a pure marital dispute and this should be sorted out in a civil court.
Yeah.
I just want to add a point here. You know, most of the journalists are sitting there in India and we are talking about a lot of cases which are going to the courts. This is Jitu here from New York. I have sort of through the same problem. I just want to highlight this. Whenever the cases they are even going to the court, court is just totally giving it a blind eye to the guy's side, to the side of the whole family for the, they never listen to it. Most of these cases, the court, they don't give the fair trial. The only thing they're asking is give money. They're asking in like multiple thousands of dollars or multiple...
So basically, I think what they're trying to say is, in a nutshell, is they're completely lopsided and there's absolutely no recourse for men and their families. There's no forum where they can share their grievances. They also have to, when faced with such a case, they have to face systematic bias at every stage, whether it is in the society, whether it's the police, whether it's the judiciary. There seems to be a systematic bias against men.
Hello.
And a mindset which thinks that only the wife is the victim and the man is always the perpetrator or the criminal.
Absolutely.
So that's
not just that. There are also women who are not even Indian citizens, who are actually, U.S. citizens, who are running to India after the divorce in the U.S., just because they want to make more money, they go to India and file a false, dowry case, hoping that by being in India they can make more money.
Coming back.
Whenever they go to
court,
guys, whatever Raj said is absolutely right, because whenever they go to court there and they even tell the judge to even listen to this, they don't listen. They end up just being getting hurt that, oh, you have to pay this many lakh of rupees. But I don't understand.
Somebody who's been outside of an Indian court knows what happens in this court. Basically, what happens is in every IPC 498A, as soon as you go to the court, the judge is... The idea of a criminal case is you hear the evidence, you decide who's guilty, who should be punished. But as soon as you have an IPC 498A, the judge does not want to hear anything. He does not want to hear your side of the story. It's assumed that what the girl is saying is correct. And the judge only talks of one thing: settle the issue. Now, what does settlement mean?
Give the money back.
It is impossible to take in such a case where a person has sent you to prison, sent your entire family to prison, has put a criminal case against you. There's absolutely no chance of getting the girl back into the fold of the family. So, what is the other kind of settlement that they're talking about? Settle it. Give her whatever she's asking for. If she's asking for a certain sum of money, which is usually the case, there's a threat of imprisonment, and then the blackmailing begins. Give me a certain sum of money, 20 lakhs, 50 lakhs, could be anything according to the person's wishes. Illegally, apart from
I would like to add...
just hold on. I need to add on to this. Me as a woman here, if I'm an Indian, whatever, I've been suffered a lot. This is Vandana. And do you think, as any woman, is there any sum which can compensate if I'm being really agonized? I don't think so. Any lump sum, even if billions, if I am being really tortured. So it is. Don't you think this is a government-sponsored extortion racket?
This is the largest...
If you are telling that you settle it out in the court, what the court, the judiciary of India is saying?
Vandana, let me just put a point here. I just want to interrupt.
Okay, guys, let me moderate.
Hang on a second.
One.
Yeah, exactly. Andy, I thought you were going to do the moderation, right?
Yeah.
Andy, I would like to add one point here.
Hold on. Avro, you there?
Yeah,
Avro, why don't you tell about your case, which is very pertinent to this this whole discussion right now about domestic violence and misuse.
Hello, everyone in India. My name is Avro Rajodhuri. I am presently based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. I think this is a good segue to bring up my case to highlight the state, the government of India sponsored legal terrorism and the inconsistency in the way a guy and a girl is treated by the government of India, and the fact that men, whether he is a non-resident Indian or whether he's a resident Indian, have no recourse to the law in the Indian judiciary. It's very unfortunate. I am absolutely ashamed to call myself an Indian. Because this country, alien country in the U.S., I got justice because of domestic abuse in the hands of my wife. After my marriage, it has been a classic case of reverse dowry where I have been financially exploited, emotionally traumatized and physically assaulted multiple times. Last year, 2006, I took my wife to trial in a district court in Minnesota, and an all-female court, the judge being a female, a lady judge, the reporters in the court, the clerks, everyone being female, gave me an order for protection against my wife for a whole 1 year because she scratched me and completely left me emotionally and traumatized and financially bankrupt. Now, what is the impression that I'm having? The government is coming in Pravasi Bharatiya Divas and asking for money, asking for investment. But when I go back to the government, when I write to the Ministry of Overseas Indian Affairs saying, hello there, I have got a justice here. Can you help me from India now? I have got already justice in an alien country. Now, you are my government. You are my sarkar. You are by the people, of the people, for the people in India. Now, I am your citizen. My wife has abused me. Help me and protect me from an Indian standpoint. And I get no answer for months. When I get back a letter from the Ministry of Overseas Indian Affairs, despite sending all the relevant police reports, all the decrees from the court here, they ask me, give us the entire details of the case and under what legal charges are you asking for a recourse. This dichotomy in the Indian government, this horrible way of treating people, this attitude the Indian government has taken is preposterous. I go to Chicago consulate. I'm with Vandana, who is a journalist of TV Asia, and she knows what I'm talking about. People don't even want to attest your documents if it relates to physical abuse by your wife, even though you have all the relevant signatures, all the court decrees, everything. Now, in India, I cannot file a 498A. I cannot file a domestic violence, even though in U.S. I have won my case. So basically, I have no recourse to the Indian judiciary. Whereas if my wife, I am living under the constant threat and terror that if my wife goes back to India today and lodges a false complaint, the court, the lower judiciary, which is stinkingly corrupt, it will not even look at the police report, it will not even look at the U.S. court decree, but immediately issue a non-bailable warrant for my old and ailing parents and a non-bailable warrant for me and eventually a red corner. What is this coming to? I know that there is an intelligentsia in India. I know there are reporters like you who are using your brains and your pen and paper to fight the social injustice and earning your bread at the same time. What are you doing to help us?
Now,
I have a court decree here, but the government doesn't help me. Why? Because if the government goes after my wife, they're not getting a penny because she is not earning as much as I do. Now, I earn more than $60,000 in the U.S. My wife slaps me with a dowry allegation of $1,000 in the U.S. Court of Law. The U.S. Court of Law totally dismisses it. The U.S. Court of Law punishes my wife by letting her stay away one block distance from wherever I live and work. But this $1,000 of dowry allegation, that will go a long way in India and have me accused. Now answer me, what kind of justice, what kind of Indian judiciary are we living in? Why would I not be ashamed to call myself a U.S. citizen five years down the line? And why am I so ashamed to call myself an Indian?
So actually, I would like to augment what Abra is saying. This is Satya from California. In a nutshell, what NRIs are saying that they have much, much better chance of getting a sound judgment and a free, a fair trial in the country they live in rather than their own government, rather than the judiciary system in India. So an Indian has better expectation from the governments outside about the judgments, about getting them a fair trial compared to their own country. Now think about that, how shameful that is.
Remember, justice in India is bought and sold, and anybody with connections can get away with anything. So since we're not living in India, they tend to get away with all kinds of nonsensical things.
I would like to add here as well. This is Avro again. Yeah. I would like to let our journalist friends in India know. Please highlight the inconsistencies, the way the Indian government is inconsistently handling the issues. A girl having any problem here can escalate the matter to the local authorities. She doesn't do that. The Indian government has no legal jurisdiction in the U.S., but she can go back and file a... And based on allegations, the guy in the U.S. can be sent a notice from the consulate, hey, give your passport back. But when the girl is convicted here, in this country, the Indian government does not do anything. The Indian consulates do not have legal jurisdiction in India. What they have is administrative jurisdiction. But in 6 out of 10 cases, if the girl's family in India has some connections with the Indian government, the Indian consulate asks for the passport based on allegation. On what basis? On what legal jurisdiction, on what administrative jurisdiction is the passport being requested for impounding based on an allegation? And take my case, an ideal case of exactly the reverse, where the girl has already been convicted, and when I request for passport impounding, the government is asking 1,000 questions to me that what, under what charges? What charge?
I think we are running out of time.
In because I don't have a 498A or a Domestic Violence Act for me. In India, we are orphans. I'm much better off in a foreign country whose judiciary is unbiased and is willing to help.
Yeah, Abra, we are running out of time.
Guys, I just have a point here to say. This is Jitendra. This is Jitu here again from New York. I just want to tell you something quickly. You know, these people, the media people there in New Delhi, they're talking about, you know, telling the government about our plights. I'll tell you something. A couple of weeks back, my parents and some other guys, even Alukma knows this, they went this new incoming Chief Justice of India, A. Balakrishnan, and, you know, sat with him and they told him the story that these guys are suffering. You know, all the NRIs and even the people there back home who are suffering. And, you know, without even listening to anything, this guy said, who's supposed to be the Chief Justice in this January, he said, no, you guys are criminals. And we were like, what criminals? There's not even a free trial. There is not even a free trial. He didn't even listen properly. He said, yes, you guys are criminals and just leave us alone. And then when, you know, somebody asked him, this is what you think of judiciary, he said, yes, 80% of people in India think judiciary is fair. And then, you know, we asked him, if judiciary is fair, why are you not giving us a fair trial? The answer he gave was, because you guys are criminals. No trial, no justice done. This is a straight answer we are getting from the incoming Chief Justice of India. What kind
of... Well, being an NRI, you become a criminal. Then do you know that?
Satya, are you going to talk about 498 cases as well?
People, yes, we will. Let's take a 10-second or 15-second break, and then we'll talk about that topic. In the meantime, our journalist friends can actually think about other questions they want to ask us.